Your conference is being recorded.
This is Dr. Harold Johnson. I am the co-director of the Hands and Voices Our Children Project. Today we are very pleased to have with us Dr. Caroline Gardino. Dr. Gardino is an associate professor of Deaf Education Program at the University of North Florida. Her research focuses upon the topics of literacy, technology, and deafness. I also know her to have a particular interest in international elements as related to the field of deaf education, working with students who are deaf plus, and also in the topic of child abuse and neglect. I've had the privilege of presenting with Dr. Gardino on a number of occasions and talking and working and, most importantly, learning from her. Dr. Gardino knows about our effort to incorporate safety objectives into our children's IEPs, and she also is aware of some of the frustrations and problems we've experienced in doing that. And today she'll be talking to us about what are some strategies we can use to accomplish that goal of enhancing the safety and success of our children. The title of her presentation is Knowing Your Child Understands Their Rights and Knows When to Say No. So, Dr. Gardino, thank you for joining us very much today, and we look forward to hearing your ideas.
Thank you, Harold, and thank you to all of you in Hands and Voices and the participants today for inviting me to speak to you about this important topic that is very close to me. I think it was approximately 6 years ago that Harold brought forth this topic to the Association of College Educators of the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. Harold, do you remember, was that in Kentucky the first time you brought that?
Right. Yes.
I think it was. And you spoke to the ACEDHH organization and presented the topic with passion, in the sense that as college educators who are preparing the future teachers of students who are deaf and hard of hearing, how we can better infuse the topic of child abuse and neglect into our preparation programs so that teachers were aware not only that they're mandatory reporters, but also that they understand the signs of child abuse and neglect so that they can be better prepared to report incidences of that in case that their students were experiencing child abuse or neglect. And you had asked the audience, and I was one of those audience members, if anybody was willing to collaborate with you on a national coalition to work towards stopping child abuse and neglect, especially with our students who are deaf and hard of hearing, but in general have disabilities. And I raised my hand immediately because as a survivor of abuse, I know firsthand what it feels like not to have your voice be heard. And I am very adamant about making sure that our students, whatever mode of communication they use, are heard, and that teachers and parents are equipped with the tools to understand what our children are saying when they need help. And even before that, you know, what are those signs that a child might be exhibiting or a student might be exhibiting that something is not right in their environment. And so I come to you today to support this drive to include goals and objectives within the IEP or the IFSP that will help our children be equipped to say no, to understand that something doesn't feel right, and to understand where to go in order to seek help and protect themselves. And so today I'd like to share with you not only my support for your goal, but also to share with you resources that exist that can help parents and teachers understand what child abuse and neglect looks like, to observe those clues, and then feel confident in their ability to report to authorities. And then I want to specifically look at not only state standards, but the Common Core standards that we can use to advocate as a means to support using child abuse and neglect curriculums into the existing standards, which would then support the need, because we know that education today is very standards-based, and our teachers are driven to make sure that those standards are met. And so if we can identify standards in which support child abuse and neglect curriculum, that would be an easier way to make sure that they are addressed on an annual basis. And I say that because we can't just suggest that teachers are going to teach this one time and children are going to know what to do. You know, we need to start as early as possible in terms of educating parents and then teaching children self-advocacy from the age of 3 years old onward. And this is essentially what can go into the IFSP and the IEPs, is making sure that they have the self-advocacy skills needed to protect themselves. And so let's start by, thank you, Harold, for introducing me and also letting everyone know that I am a bright spot, and I'll get to that a little bit later. But so Harold, going back to where we were, Harold came to the organization and I jumped on board, and since then Harold and I have worked together and on various projects to push this agenda, this national agenda, forward. And one of the projects that we recently completed was the state of Florida uses a curriculum by the Monique Burr Foundation, Safety Matters, and Child Safety Matters, and we address this curriculum in the sense that making sure that students with disabilities have access to that curriculum. So I know today the presentation is being captioned, and I appreciate that. And that is another element that we need to make sure to address, is to make sure that all of our materials are accessible for all of our students and our parents. So regardless of a child's hearing loss, whether it be mild or profound, whether or not it's a unilateral or bilateral loss, we know that that can impact their ability to learn language as well as understand and acquire academic skills across subject matters, especially communication. Keeping that in mind, we know that students who are deaf and hard of hearing are often misunderstood because of their challenges with language. We know that they also have struggle with their ability to regulate social and emotional situations because of the struggle with language. We also know that they may not always be given self-advocacy strategies needed to prevent abuse or neglect. And so that's where our job as parents and as teachers begins, is making sure, first of all, that our children have the language needed in order to express what they are feeling and what they're experiencing. In order for us to provide children and students with those tools, we as teachers and parents need to have those tools first. So we know that child abuse, especially in residential schools, has been a problem. But we also know that now more than ever, we have curriculums and tools accessible free to us online that we can use in order to educate ourselves so that we can educate our children and students. Our project really focuses on understanding, observing, and reporting abuse and neglect. And there is an incredible checklist that I'd like to point out on the Hands and Voices website, that Our Child Project has a safety checklist. And within that checklist, you can learn about the different types of abuse. So we know that there's neglect, there's physical, sexual, emotional, and psychological abuse. And where people might be confused is a lot of the curriculum sometimes take this approach that abuse occurs from strangers, but we know that's not true. The research actually notes that typically the abuse is a known member of the child's family. The child knows that the abuser. And so the more people that are highly educated in the immediate circle to that child, the more protection that that child has. We're working together to make sure that that child has a safety network. So understanding what does neglect look like, what does physical abuse look like, and sexual abuse and emotional, psychological. Emotional abuse is one of the hardest types of abuse to identify, but it often doesn't occur alone. And so we can look at other indicators to help us determine whether or not that child is experiencing emotional or psychological abuse. What I tell my pre-service teachers in Florida, you know, one of the things that you should look out for is if a child is trying to cover themselves, since it's typically hot here in Florida, one of the signs might be that a child is wearing long sleeves or long pants at a time where the weather's very hot. And so they may be trying to cover themselves or cover some type of physical bruise or scarring. And some of those signs are very important for us to be looking out for. Also the way that the child interacts with other children, other adults, can give you indications of the type of what they consider is normal behavior. And sometimes it's not. I remember I was doing a research study here in Florida, and the classroom had students with severe behavior challenges, and many of them were considered developmentally delayed because they were young, so young they didn't have a clear diagnosis yet. And I remember something that one of the children was doing, and you know, there was a clear indicator that they had a skewed perception of what typical behavior or normal behavior was when they were taking a pillow during circle time and laying on it in a way and moving on the pillow in a way that was referring to a sexual performance. And I thought, you know, and the child said, oh, yeah, you know, I see, you know, my daddy do this with his girlfriends. And so I thought, you know, these are the indicators where we feel uncomfortable because we don't want to accept that this child is replicating a behavior that they should not have seen at this age, or children who are 4 and 5 in a preschool environment. And, you know, what do we do at that point? So many teachers might say, oh, okay, you know, I'm just going to ignore that or stop doing that. That's not okay. But really what we need to do is document what we're seeing. Document and say, okay, if this does not seem normal. And if the child then continues to have atypical behavior, then it's our responsibility to turn that documentation not only to our supervisor, but we then need to use our gut and say, okay, I need to call the authorities. what our pre-service teachers do is they typically get worried, like, oh my gosh, am I going to get fired? Or are the parents going to be arrested? And I tell them, no, you know, what's going, you're a mandatory reporter. So when you see something or a child reports something that is atypical and you can follow your gut, you can follow your common sense, you can ask other, maybe you have an assistant in the classroom if they've also heard that, the child report that, but your obligation is to report not only to your supervisor, but to an authority. And so I often refer them to the 1-800 for a child helpline, or they can call the local police department and report. And I tell them, you don't have to be afraid to be a reporter because you're not indicting somebody when you call. What you're doing is you're opening an investigation. And you have to think about this in terms of the child. If you don't do something, yes, it's illegal because you're a mandatory reporter, but think about the child first. If you don't report what you hear or what you see, then that can only further hurt the child, depending on what they're experiencing. And so I remind them, you're opening an investigation. You're not sending anybody to jail. And in those cases, unfortunately, it takes quite a while before actually action is taken. And so really, ultimately, in order for us to be able to help our children and help our students, we first need to understand what are the different types of abuse, what do they look like, what does a child's reaction to that type of abuse look like, and then how do we respond? And so some of the resources that we have available to us are not only that safety checklist that I referred to earlier, but we also have great resources from the Child Welfare Information Gateway. We have an excellent publication by Harold Johnson on the ASHA website entitled Protecting the Most Vulnerable from Abuse. We have curriculums that are available to us, such as Kid Power, Good Touch and Bad Touch, the Monique Burr Foundation. We have a hotline. So the hotline, the 1-800-4-A-CHILD hotline, you can utilize that as a resource for more information. Not even if you are suspecting a child has abuse, but you want to know more. These people are there to help, as well as the bright spots. So I mentioned those earlier. So Harold had begun a quest to identify 100 professionals across our nation and even into Canada that were available to assist parents and teachers, who even students who feel vulnerable or need assistance discussing the topic of child abuse and neglect. And I am one of those bright spots, as well as several other amazing individuals who you could see their videos and see their testimonies on if you Google search bright spots, deaf and hard of hearing, child abuse, it'll lead you right to that web resource. So I want to talk just a few minutes about bridging the gap between knowing what child abuse and neglect looks like and how can we get this information infused into the existing curriculum in our schools so that we can have IEP goals and objectives that protect our children and students. So what I did is because I'm living and teaching in Florida, I'm going to take the approach the first approach I'm going to take is by looking at the Florida state standards. And then I encourage you to look at your state standards, because those standards are probably fairly similar to Florida's. And we did not adopt the Common Core, but our standards are very similar to Common Core. So if your state is using Common Core, you can look at those standards. And I have a couple references from the Common Core that we'll address as well. But my push is, if we utilize the standards, because teachers have to work towards helping their students meet the standards, that will give us the leverage we need to support child abuse and neglect curriculum infusion into the existing school programs. So looking at the Florida standards, there's health education, there's physical education, there's science, and we have what's called special skills. And those standards were developed based on different advocacy groups for students with disabilities, and the national standards that are to support and further develop the skills needed for students with specific disabilities. So we have special skills for students who are deaf and hard of hearing, those who have visual impairments, etc. But I'll look, because we're focused on deaf and hard of hearing, I want to present some of those special skill standards for students who are deaf and hard of hearing, as well as the unique skills students with disabilities need across the board. So looking first at the Florida standards in health education, beginning all the way from kindergarten, we have a standard that states, demonstrate the ability to use interpersonal communication skills to enhance health and avoid or reduce health risks. So most teachers might think, oh, okay, this standard means that I'm going to teach a set of skills that helps them understand, okay, candy is bad for me. But we don't have to take that approach. That this standard doesn't tell us we have to teach about foods that are good or exercises that are good for us that would reduce health risks. This standard is written in a way that will allow us to say, I'm going to give you the interpersonal skills. I'm going to teach you the interpersonal skills that will help you reduce the risk of child abuse or neglect. And that's the same. So that we have health education at the first grade level that says internal and external influences. Analyze the influence of family, peers, culture, media, technology, and other factors on health behaviors. What a great. This standard lends itself to saying, I can analyze the way in which my family and peers and technology are making me feel. How is my health based on my family, my interaction with my family? And that health is, do they treat me with respect? Do they touch me in a way that's safe? This is first graders, right? So we're still talking about bathing our children and preparing them for bedtime. Even if we're talking about neglect, do they encourage me to use the, do I have potty training? Have I been potty trained? Am I able to get up in the middle of the night and use the restroom safely? Do I know that I need to take care and brush my teeth and bathe myself? So the standards are lending themselves for us as educators and parents to advocate for our children to be able to protect themselves and understand what their rights are. In the second grade in Florida, we have a health education standard that says self-management. Demonstrate the ability to practice advocacy, health-enhancing behaviors, and avoidance of reduction of health risks for oneself. So again, I encourage you to look at the standards in your state, because I believe that they too will hold the key to allowing us to unlock the language that we need in order to infuse child abuse and neglect curriculum. And really, when I say child abuse and neglect curriculum, I think what I'm really saying is self-advocacy, because the more our children know and understand how to protect themselves and how to communicate their needs and their feelings, then that is what prevents abuse and neglect. And so looking at physical education standards in Florida, we have the value of physical activity for health, enjoyment, challenge, self-expression, and social interaction. So understanding, you know, keeping oneself safe also it means having good physical skills and appropriate interactions with oneself in our environment. The science standards, we start at first grade teaching about heredity and reproduction all the way through the fourth grade. And so really infusing what is appropriate physical touch versus good touch, bad touch, and understanding their body and how to refer to their body parts can all be incorporated into our science curriculum. Now, talking about the special skills that we have here in Florida, we have a lot that focuses on language, self-determination, self-advocacy, personal and interpersonal communication skills. This, again, refers back to the better our students are able to self-advocate and communicate, the better they will be able to protect themselves. So now let's look at the Common Core. So we know that the Common Core is very general, but we have some specific standards that discuss English language arts, and they refer to speaking and listening. So if we were to look under that standard, we could see that there is a standard for describing people, places, things, and events with relevant details, expressing ideas and feelings clearly. There again is just that the essence of being able to communicate and express themselves and protect themselves. And so I could go on and on, but I don't, I have a presentation here that's guiding my discussion with you today, and I'll share that with Harold and Janet. It does include screenshots of these standards, and I encourage you, again, to look at your own standards if you feel like that's what you need to have the evidence that supports including goals into the IEP that align with your state standards, because the state standards we know have to be met, and teachers are accountable for meeting those standards. And we're not asking them to take the entire school year to address this safety, child abuse, safety and neglect curriculum, but we are asking them to do it regularly and to do it annually so that students have the ability to self-advocate and they understand the signs. And, you know, if essentially students can help each other. You know, the greater the network, the greater the protection that they have. I think that I've done quite a bit of talking, and I do want to leave you with my email address, which I think was on the flyer. Feel free to email me at caroline.guardino@unf.edu. But also, are there any questions that you might have for me today, considering the content that I've covered? And I know we don't have a lot of time, but I'd like to provide you with the opportunity to ask me any questions that I might be able to answer.
So, Harold, go ahead.
Go ahead, Harold.
This is Harold Johnson. Yes, Harold. Caroline, one of the problems we have with a lot of our kids is that they are lonely. They're isolated. They don't have many friends. And for some of the kids, any attention is better than no attention, and sometimes attention can be bad. It can be bullying. It can be other harmful. Are there any strategies that you found that would deal with kids learning how to have friends, age-appropriate friends, and to have a sense of what friends do and don't do?
Yeah, that's great, Harold, that you brought that up. That is incredibly important, and I know that students can seek out attention that may not be positive and in some ways detrimental. And so understanding a healthy relationship is a great place to start. Understanding, having role models of what is a healthy relationship is important. And to be able to make that connection between healthy relationships they see amongst the adults that they know, and then maybe their siblings, healthy relationship with their siblings, having friends, and have themselves with their older or younger siblings is important. I think you asked me about resources, making friends and finding friends. You know, I think typically, unfortunately, it seems to me that children are trying to find that information online. And there's a plethora of information online, and we know that a lot of it can be dangerous. And so I always encourage the pre-service teachers to have a couple online resources that students can refer to, but really to teach that social interaction within their own classrooms and to send home information to parents. And so some of the resources that we can use are some of the books that you have listed on the safety checklist that are appropriate for children at different age levels that teach them about what a loving relationship is, how parents take care of their children, how grandparents take care of their children, some of the safe traditions that families experience and practice that show love and respect for one another. So books are a good place to start. There are some social interaction videos that you can, that teachers and parents can share with their children. And then there's also role playing. From my experiences, the students get a lot from role-playing what is a healthy interaction with one another, what is respect, self-respect, and respect for others.
Thank you very much. Are there other questions that you guys would like to ask Caroline before we let her go back to her other work?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, this is Joey Dahlia. I used to work at FSDB. Now I'm up in New Jersey.
I remember you.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you, really, because I was looking for resources. I wanted to, you know, I do a lot of pull-out sessions and a lot of push into the classroom, but I don't lead my own class anymore. So I like the idea of books, videos. I'm going to look at the special skills standards from Florida and see if anything in New Jersey correlates. But just wanted to say thank you for the resources and the information.
Oh, you're welcome. Really, honestly, the safety checklist that's being developed by Hands and Voices and Harold Johnson, that has got a very comprehensive list of books, videos, materials, and many of them are free. Another resource that I do like to use, Joey, is the described and captioned media. I'm pretty sure that you probably already have subscribed to that resource, But there you can download, I stream videos that I show to the pre-service teachers, and you can use them to show to your students as well. And they're all captioned and described. And they really have a good, they're a good resource in terms of describing what are the different types of abuses and how do you identify those the different abuses. But if you're talking about younger children, you could utilize some of the described and captioned media in terms of what is appropriate way to interact, and some social skill videos as well.
Okay.
And
cool.
Some like safe resources. They have just a plethora of videos that are accessible and available to anyone working with students who are deaf or blind.
Cool. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We have time for one more question if someone would like to ask Caroline a question about the material we're talking about today.
This is Christine Griffin. I'm calling from Washington State. Can you hear me okay?
I am. Hi, Christine.
Yeah. Hi. I had a question regarding evaluation. So if a student in a school is evaluated and the school says, well, that student doesn't qualify for, specially designed instruction, what are the strategies families can take at that point?
So in Washington, is there a curriculum that is being used statewide to teach children about abuse and neglect or even perhaps development, like personal development? And
there are a few that I've heard teachers talk about that have been adopted by specific schools. I don't know if there's one specific to the state of Washington, though.
Well, what I would suggest then is, like I said, Google the safety checklist, deaf and hard of hearing. It's on the Hands and Voices website. Harold, is there a better way for me to refer them to the safety checklist?
No, that's probably the best way. It's also is linked to the Deaf Education website under the knowledge base, so whichever place you guys want to go.
Oh, DeafEd.net?
Yeah, DeafEd.net under the knowledge base heading. You can find it also there. Or simply email, if you guys need it, email Janet or myself, and we'll send you the link or a copy of the document.
Because what I would say is that if the school deems the student, evaluates the student and says that they don't qualify, well, that doesn't stop parents and teachers from utilizing resources that will supplement that student's knowledge base. And so the safety checklist has a list of videos and DVDs and online resources that you can use to educate not only the child but the parents. A lot of times what happens is with these curriculums is you have components that are developed for the child, and then there's a handout that can be sent home to the parents so that they have some knowledge of what the child was learning, and then it'll prompt the parents to be able to ask their child questions, and then that further allows the child to expand on what they learned in terms of, okay, this is not okay, or this is how I'm feeling, and this is who I can report to, and who are the safe people in my environment. And so the tools that are developed typically in the curriculum have not only things that are tangible to the child, but supporting documents that can be sent home. And they're not, and often they have them in not only English, but Spanish and sometimes other languages in case you've got diverse populations that you're working with. But they don't inundate the parent either. They're typically checklists or maybe a game they can play with their child just to further support that education and reinforce what the child is learning in school.
Is it okay if I make a comment real quick?
Please.
Thanks, Harold. This is Janet. Dr. Gordino, thank you so much for this presentation today. I can tell you many of us on this call and on this committee, when we established the safety checklist, were very enthusiastic about taking it out to our children's IEP teams and often really met with resistance, even beyond what Christine was talking about, not being eligible. Even for our kids who are eligible, often teams would sit there kind of with a blank stare saying, this does not correlate to the IEP discussion. I think it's kind of new for a lot of people. So associating this with the Common Core standards or state standards, you made a statement earlier about it unlocking that language creates the foundation for these conversations. I can't tell you how excited I am for those of us who have hit some roadblocks to maybe be able to use this as a way to create better conversations in the IEP meeting. So thank you very much for that. That was just fantastic.
You're welcome. Yeah, I agree. I think that maybe often when you're confronted with that roadblock or that resistance, it's probably out of fear because this is a really uncomfortable topic for many people. And so identifying who feels comfortable in the school to address the topic with the students is also an important factor. And many times that's the school counselor because they've had the training. And so identifying who that person is and then getting teachers to jump on board, it will happen. It just isn't often quick. And I think it's the same approach that when Harold began this conversation 6 or 8 years ago, I don't remember. It's just people are uncomfortable, but letting them know that you're a safe person to talk to and that you're comfortable talking about it gives them often the small step they need to be moving in the right direction. And, you know, we can hold their hand and we can continue to talk to them to make them feel comfortable. We can even do the work for them because unless we talk about it, nothing's going to happen. And that's why we're here working together.
You know, just gives me some further emphasis to what Caroline is talking about. I just finished an analysis of all the CEC online documents in terms of their policies, the procedures, and particularly their standards. Whereas all special education teachers know they're mandatory reporters, only one special education group, early childhood, early intervention, has a standard specifically stating that they should be prepared to recognize the signs of emotional distress, neglect, and abuse, and follow reporting procedures. The only other group of special ed professionals that has a standard like that are paraprofessionals. All the other special education professionals, there's not one single standard stated for their preparation. Now, there is an ethical standard saying that the teacher should do no harm and they should report unethical behavior, but it's so vague that it's not addressed. So most of our special education professionals, while they want to do right and they know that this is important, they are not sufficiently prepared yet. And part of what Hands of Voice is doing now is working with and challenging CEC to recognize the current inadequacies of their standards and then to encourage them to better prepare our teachers, our students' teachers, so that they actually know how to respond to us when they say, hey, I want my kids to know how to communicate and find friends, and they have a self-advocacy rights. And Caroline, you know, your presentation today and the work of Hands and Voices is kind of leading the way to that. So, again, we thank you for this very much. Janet, I think that probably concludes this part of the presentation. So I'm going to turn it back over to you. And again, thank you, Caroline, very, very, very much for your presentation. And we will pass along, once you send it to us, a copy of your PowerPoint or make it available on the Hands and Voices website. And certainly we do recognize you as one of our bright spots in helping us keep our kids safe and successful. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you again for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Hey, this is Jana. Thank you so much. And Harold, would you mind just sharing with the group who our speaker is for next month?
Oh, I didn't know you were going to ask me that, actually. It's Dr. Catherine Kaur. Dr. Kaur is at Vanderbilt University. She actually is leading... the early childhood, early intervention section of CEC's development of standards specifically around this topic of not simply recognizing and reporting, but also preventing child abuse and neglect. She has conducted research on this topic. She was a fellow that was funded specifically on this topic and is one of the bright spots that we hope to introduce you to the Hands and Voices group. So with Dr. Catherine Corr from Vanderbilt, who will be talking about this topic from an early intervention standpoint and helping both parents and professionals to know how that they can help families to be safe and therefore their kids successful.
Thank you, Harold. This is Janet, and I just want to thank everybody for joining us today. We are going to be having a specific booth at the Early Hearing Detection and Intervention Conference next month in Atlanta for the Hour Project. Hopefully, it'll be right next to the Hands and Voices booth. Before we close today, I just wanted to give any of our regular committee members or any of our core team, Sarah or Cresta, any final comments that you wanted to make today?
This is Sarah. Thank you, Carolyn, so much for sharing. I know you didn't get a lot of sleep last night, but I, too, am really encouraged that we can connect this kind of work to standards. And I'm wondering, and I'll email you about this, if you have thoughts about how parents might advocate within the school districts to expand standards to include this kind of information if it's not already available. But that's for another date.
Thanks, Sarah. That's a great question. It motivates me for our group to go back and look at our safety checklist to see if we can incorporate some of this language in today's conversation around standards and directly into the checklist that might help families. So, again, we want to thank you all for joining us. We meet every month, the same time, the same place. I am so sorry there was a delayed start today, but typically we're really good at starting right at the top of the hour. So thanks, everyone. We hope you will join us next month. If you're not on our on our regular committee list, please email me, janet@handsandvoices.org, and we'll make sure that you're put on the list to receive information. But you might want to just go ahead and put in your calendars the second Tuesday of the month at noon Eastern time, typically for 1 hour. And we'll look forward to our guest speaker tomorrow. And thank you all for being a part of this movement to keep our kids safe. Have a great day, and we hope to hear from you and see you again. This will be available for a recording and a transcript, so please email me if you would like that. Thanks again, all, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
This is Cresta. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Oh, that was a